Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 4th, 2016. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda are pleading with the government in Juba to negotiate with armed groups fighting in Yei River State.
We don't give chance for dialogue to prevail, and that is where we get ourselves into messes. I would really urge that when we try to think about national issues and issues of our country, we need to drop down our personal, you know, beings, our self-interest.
And hundreds of vulnerable women are offered jobs to clean roads in Torit town.
The primary objective of this work is just to provide something little to the vulnerable community, I mean the poor, who did not get the opportunity of getting a job.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese refugees who fled to neighboring Uganda from Morobo County last week are calling on the government in Juba to restore peace and negotiate with armed groups to end hostilities in Yei River State. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
The refugees say the main road linking Uganda and South Sudan has been rendered impassable by armed men who block the roads. Most people fleeing the area pass through the Democratic Republic of Congo before crossing into Uganda, a distance of about 30 miles on foot. Moro Moses fled with his two wives and two children from Morobo on foot last weekend following the renewed violence in the area. Moses says he is hopeful peace returns to South Sudan so that he can go back with his family.
We don't expect that incident to happen. Otherwise, we could be at our place called South Sudan. But due to this incident, then it has made everybody to get scared and even to fly out of South Sudan. We are just praying that everything at least has to be successful so that we can at least return.
On Monday evening, Moses and his family were relocated to Bidibidi camp. 2 days ago, Louisa Dawa fled Morobo County via the Democratic Republic of Congo to Uganda and says most of the roads are occupied by gunmen. She says the county has become too insecure for civilians.
The rebels really are around Morobo County. There are some people, few, who are left, but they are on the other side of Congo. What I have to say is really people have to leave that place because it's really so dangerous and many people are losing their life right now, as I'm saying.
Luca Remo fled Morobo County and is now in Uganda's Koboko district. Remo says once the two warring parties cease hostilities, he will return to South Sudan.
Then if people are going back, even I will go back even tomorrow. Let us struggle and then work for peace, and then I want my people to come back. We settle together there, like before we stay there in Morobo.
Most of the South Sudanese fleeing Morobo are being taken to Bidibidi refugee camp of Yumbe district in northern Uganda. Last week, South Sudanese refugees said at least 6 children have died over the past month due to poor health services in the refugee camps in northern Uganda's Arua district. The refugees say the situation in the camps may worsen because of increased cases of acute diarrhea and malaria. Mawa George Lazarus is the executive director for Community Empowerment for Rehabilitation and Development, a local civil society organization in Yei. Lazarus says conflicts continue in South Sudan because of a lack of dialogue between the warring parties.
We tend to act when we are emotional, probably when we are angry, and we don't give chance for dialogue to prevail. And that is where we get ourselves into messes. I would really urge that when we try to think about national issues and issues of our country, we need to drop down our personal, you know, beings, our self-interest.
Lazarus believes the deployment of additional UN troops across the entire country will help deter clashes between the parties.
South Sudan itself is not Juba. Juba is just the capital city. So concentrating these forces in Juba will mean that the other locations that are currently experiencing hardships will still be witnessing a kind of insecurity like that. So it's important to really ensure that the key locations, key towns, are also, you know, part of this process, that this force is brought, especially like Yei.
The government of South Sudan recently approved the UN's decision to send a 4,000-strong regional protection force to help protect the civilians and key government institutions. This is the sixth month since Yei River State, counties of Morobo, Lanya, and Kajokeji experienced the periodic insecurity. The UN earlier reported that about 100,000 Yei residents were stranded within the town with no means of escape. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Arua District,
Uganda. The International Organization for Migration, also known as IOM, is expressing concern about the regional impact of the South Sudan conflict. The IOM spokesperson in South Sudan says the country's leaders need to find a political solution to the crisis as the number of South Sudanese crossing international borders in search of safety is growing each day. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
IOM spokesperson Ashley McLaughlin says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries, including Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan, after violence erupted in Juba in July. She says IOM is working with other humanitarian agencies to provide humanitarian assistance to help both the refugees and the host communities in the countries where South Sudanese are seeking refuge.
They're continuing to receive several hundred in Ethiopia into the Gambela region, and it's stressing existing resources. So IOM, for example, in Ethiopia is helping to relocate South Sudanese refugees from the border registration point in Pagak to other camps.
McLaughlin says the IOM has relocated nearly 24,000 refugees, especially women and children, to Ethiopia's Gambela region since September. She says approximately 90,000 other South Sudanese have fled to Sudan. McLaughlin says this kind of huge influx also affected border communities in other countries.
Some of the areas on the borders, host communities are already faced with stretched resources for themselves in terms of shelter, in terms of access to food and access to water.
2 weeks ago, the UNHCR released a report saying South Sudanese refugees had reached the 1 million mark in the neighboring countries. UNHCR says Uganda hosts more than 373,000 South Sudanese refugees, some of whom fled the country following the flare-up in violence in July. McLaughlin says the international community must do more to help South Sudanese refugees in neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Torit, where World Bank has a project employing women and they are paid 80 South Sudanese pounds, or around $1 per day, for draining stagnant water and sweeping roads in and around the town. The project targets hundreds of economically vulnerable women, including widows. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
The World Bank Safety Net and Skills Development Project has employed nearly 3,000 women to clean the town's roads, cleaning the streets of Torit town. Most of the women signed up for the new project are widows unemployed. Some of them used to brew and sell local beer or produce charcoal, but did not earn enough money to take care of their children's needs. Speaking in her Orugo language, Katarina Ihisa says the money she earns from her new job will help her buy food for her family.
I will now be able to buy a bowl of flour and feed my children. I am getting 75 South Sudanese pounds per day. My children will be able to eat.
Another beneficiary, Anna Ikwahe, says she too is grateful for her new job. Speaking in her local Oruho language, she says she can now afford to provide for her family.
We want this work to help us and our children in the family. Even if I get 75 daily, my children will survive until the end.
The women say their new jobs will also combat the spread of malaria by cleaning bushes along the roadsides and draining stagnant water, which are breeding grounds for mosquitoes. Tabita Iwe is a community leader in Murware residential area.
They are now giving us this work so that you can benefit on it by getting, after 3 weeks, you get some little money like 1,050 after 3 weeks. Now we are working on those roads. After we finish the first road, we can jump to another road. After we finish clearing the roads, we shall also dig the water channels that can allow even through some other thing like water tank can move. Like for us, if somebody is sick, the vehicle can come up to your gate. That's something good. This is what we are benefiting.
Ali Mure Ale Auda, a community project mobilizer with the Dutch Development Agency, SNV, which is supervising the project on behalf of the World Bank, says they target women and people with physical disabilities as well as unemployed so they can earn a living.
The primary objective of this work is just to provide, you know, something little to the vulnerable community, I mean the poor, who do not get the opportunity of getting a job, do not get the opportunity of doing some business simply because somebody is either elderly, somebody is either a widow, or somebody has not got the opportunity of going to school, more so he cannot, you know, get a job. So it becomes very difficult for them to earn a living.
Norman Charles Gideon is Director General in the Ministry of Physical Infrastructure for Imotong State. Gideon expects the new project to enable disabled and widowed women to earn decent wages.
These women, they used to be in their homes doing nothing and even gaining nothing. They were actually having a kind of a poverty life. They're living under poverty life. Net safety work has come in to overcome these vulnerable women, to make them again regain their strengths, to make them be considered to the society as important people by doing the work themselves, getting the money by themselves.
Charles acknowledges that many of the roads in and around Turit have become impassable, partly because his ministry is unable to maintain them on a regular basis. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, why don't more South Sudanese women use family planning and what is being done to change that status? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
has your standard of living gone up or down the last 5 years? And what is the reason?
Okay, according to me, the standard of living is going down. Due to inflation, prices keep on going up, and yet the salaries are never indexed. So that is a great effect, meaning someone is getting the same amount of money he or she used to get in the last 5 years, and yet the prices of things keeps on going up.
It has gone down. And the reasons why you think this has happened is because the governance of the state has not been as it should be.
I would say my standard of living at the beginning of the last 5 years has gone up considerably, but it has again come down. And the reason is the inflation and also the crisis whereby my country is now witnessing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about family planning. The UN Fund for Population Activities says family planning goes hand in hand with gender equality and women empowerment, and is key in reducing poverty in countries like South Sudan. But some aid workers and medical staff in South Sudan say they are running into cultural, logistical, and security barriers when it comes to offering women family planning. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Sinan Hunton, senior technical advisor for the UN's Population Fund in Juba, says one way to lower maternal or infant mortality rates is to help women consider the benefits of family planning, which is a practice of controlling the number of children they have and lengthening the pauses between childbirths.
Because just by spacing delivery, we can reduce by 30% the risk of maternal death. we can reduce by another 10% the risk of losing a child. And so this is very critically important, especially for a young nation like South Sudan, about social economic transformation and survival. So having said that, yes, we have a social barrier in the use of family planning in South Sudan. But this is not particular to South Sudan.
Only about 1% of South Sudanese women in a marriage or a union are using modern contraception in South Sudan, according to the government's household survey. That's compared to a prevalence of 60% in advanced countries. The lack of access to contraceptives, tied with the increasing prevalence of violence across the country, has encouraged the UN Population Fund to look at other ways to help with family planning in South Sudan.
But because also of the crisis, there is a high demand for making babies. The fertility here in South Sudan is at 6.7, which means every woman in reproductive age is expected to have a minimum of seven children. When you have that many children at a very younger age, you are exposed to the risk of death.
Haunton says religious, social, and cultural barriers discourage many women from getting help with family planning, and the UNFPA has only assisted about 1,300 women in South Sudan since the beginning of the year, which includes psychosocial services and dignity kits to ease the trauma of war. Issues like maintaining confidentiality and guaranteeing safe practices in their clinics make it difficult for health officials to treat patients.
Any countries, poor countries, where education is low, we tend to have those barriers. For example, here in South Sudan, child marriage is very, very high. 40% of adolescent girls by the age 15 are already married off. So when you think about it, quite often when they are married, they drop out of school as well. They become pregnant. Their body is not even well prepared or ready to sustain pregnancy. So we have a lot of complications. They cannot pursue their dreams.
The UN Population Fund says 225 million women in developing countries want to avoid pregnancy but do not have access to safe family planning methods. Most of these women live in 69 of the poorest countries in the world, including South Sudan. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Large, majestic creatures like elephants and lions tend to dominate the debate at most major meetings of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. On this year's agenda, there were some lesser-known animals like the Hong Kong witinuit, the Titicaca water frog, and the Cuban land snail. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Paul has the story.
The pangolin is an unlikely candidate for the spotlight. The scaly, anteater-like creature is shy, smelly, and mostly nocturnal. Yet the humble pangolin has had a star turn this year, with the world's largest wildlife convention this week recommending all 8 pangolin species be banned from international trade. The mammal is the world's most trafficked animal, desired for its reputed and largely debunked benefits in traditional medicine. The pangolin is just one of some 500 threatened species that were up for discussion at this year's CITES conference in Johannesburg. But the big animals tend to dominate, CITES Secretary General John Scanlon told VOA.
What attracts the most public attention is the megafauna, the elephants, the rhinos, the lions. That's why we're pleased to see some smaller species like the pangolin also attract attention. But we've got the snakes here, we've got the lizards here, we've got the frogs here, and some really interesting ones, the earless monitor, the Titicaca frog, the psychedelic rock gecko. There's some really interesting animals there that nobody's paid much attention to.
That's because, says U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Dan Ash, it's hard to build awareness for an animal with a weird name or an ugly face. For example, he's proud that the United States last year made history by rescuing the first ever fish from the federal list of endangered and threatened animals. But it took nearly 2 decades to save the unremarkable-looking Oregon chub.
A lot of times the things that we have the most trouble with are, you know, things that, you know, are less identifiable or less iconic. You're dealing with things like the Delhi sands flower-loving fly, or the Houston toad. These are things which often the public questions. Why is this important? Why should we save this? And usually what I tell people is because we don't understand.
The pangolin, for example, survives by eating ants and termites, which means they keep insect populations in check. But conservationists say many of these species have not been as carefully studied as their larger, more famous counterparts, meaning even experts don't necessarily know how vital they are to their ecosystems. Jan Creamer, president of Animal Defenders International, says she's never met an animal she didn't like. Even the cockroach, she says, has a strange sort of beauty. But saving small, secretive creatures is unusually hard, she says.
I think it takes, sometimes with certain species, it takes time to realize that they're in trouble. But I do think that, you know, this is what CITES is about and CITES helps with, because it does give a forum where all of these issues can be raised for all of these animals.
Scanlon says what these creatures often need is a cheerleader.
We used to say the lesser-known pangolin, but then we saw Prince William and others focus a lot of attention on the pangolin, and now I'd say it's the well-known pangolin. And that was because of the attention given to it through the convention, but also through our parties and through high-profile figures like Prince William.
So far, no royal has stepped up for Peru's shudderingly ugly Titicaca water frog, which is critically endangered by fungal disease and hungry trout. But Scanlon says he holds out hope that someday, maybe, this frog's prince will come. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Governance in Africa has been adversely affected by declining national and personal security, according to the 2016 Mo Ibrahim Foundation Index of African Governance. The annual report indicates some progress in areas like anti-corruption, education, agriculture, and infrastructure. But several countries on the continent have been hit by crises, including Libya. Jendai Fraser tells VOA the NATO intervention in Libya was too hasty, and leaders in Britain and France failed to listen to warnings from other African countries. Henry Ridgewell has this report from London.
Almost two in three African citizens live in a country in which safety and the rule of law have deteriorated during the past decade, according to the annual Ibrahim Index on African Governance. The report rates 54 African countries on a range of criteria, including education, corruption, and democracy. Presenting the findings Monday in London, the founder of the index, Sudanese-born billionaire and philanthropist Mo Ibrahim, said the statistics send a clear message.
This is a very strong mathematical correlation between safety and rule of law and development. And so we cannot say it more louder that we need peace in Africa.
Former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Jendai E. Fraser, a member of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, told VOA the decline in security is especially concerning.
Because it's dragging down governance as a whole, but also because it affects the lives of people. You know, when you're talking about personal safety and national security, you're talking about life and death.
Libya has shown one of the sharpest declines in national security and personal safety. Britain and France led the NATO airstrikes that helped to oust Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Fraser says that intervention was a clear mistake.
We have lessons to learn, and one of the big lessons I would think is if the region is overwhelmingly against an intervention, you should hesitate. You should think twice. Another lesson should be if you're not prepared to fix it, don't break it.
Mauritius held on to the top spot, while Somalia remained at the bottom of the index. Rwanda was among the nations showing the fastest improvement, entering the top 10 for the first time. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudanese from Yei River State's Morobo County who fled to neighboring Uganda last week after fighting broke out between government forces and a local armed group are pleading with the government to restore peace in the area by negotiating with the armed men. Morobo County refugees in Uganda's West Nile area say the main road linking the two countries is now impassable because of gun who block the roads. Most people fleeing from the area pass through the Democratic Republic of Congo before moving into Uganda, a distance of about 30 miles on foot. Moro Moses, who fled with his two wives and two children from Morobo on foot last weekend, says he's hopeful that peace returns to South Sudan so that he and his family can go back home. On Monday evening, Moses and his family were relocated to Bidi Bidi camp. 2 days ago, another Morobo resident who fled to Uganda says most of the roads are occupied by gunmen and the county has become too insecure for most civilians. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, is expressing concern about the regional impact of the South Sudan conflict. Ashley McLaughlin, the IOM spokesperson in South Sudan, says the country's leaders need to find a political solution to the crisis as the number of South Sudanese becoming refugees grows exponentially each day. McLaughlin also says the warring parties must allow access to civilians caught up in the conflict, as well as freedom of movement for those forced to flee across borders. McLaughlin says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries, including Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan, after violence that erupted in Juba of July of this year. She says IOM is working with other humanitarian agencies to provide humanitarian assistance and develop sustainable strategies to help both the refugees and host communities in the areas where refugees have been fleeing to. She says the influx of South Sudanese refugees to Ethiopia is straining existing resources. McLaughlin also says the IOM has relocated nearly 24,000 refugees, especially women and children, to Ethiopia's Gambela region since September of this year. And finally, a World Bank project in Tord is employing hundreds of economically vulnerable women to clean roads for draining stagnant water and sweeping roads in and around Tord. The women will earn 80 South Sudanese pounds. That's about $1 per day. The World Bank Safety Net and Skills Development Project has employed nearly 300 women to remove standing water and cut grass along the roadways. Most of the women working on the new project used to brew tea, sell local beer, or produce charcoal for a living, but they say they did not earn enough money to pay for their children's needs. One Torrent resident says the money she makes from her new job will help put food on the table for her family. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Waka Waka by Shakira.
You're a good soldier, choosing your battles. Pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh, waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa, this time for Africa. To shine, don't wait in line, it's almost but over. People are raising their expectations. Go on a feed and this is your moment, no hesitation. Today's your day, I feel it. You pave the way, believe it. If you get down, get up, oh, oh. When you get down, get up, hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. This time for Africa. Tamina, mina, hey, hey. Waka, waka.
We've been listening to Shakira with a remix of the song Waka Waka. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad to have you with us today. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.